guys, welcome to Black Spin Global Podcast. I am Lucy.
And I'm Eugene.
And welcome to another great episode and the final episode
of the season,
man.
We're already there, it's crazy.
Eugene, first of all, round of applause.
Facts.
Round of applause to us.
Big facts.
This has been an incredible journey. This has been, honestly, it's been a highlight of my year.
Oh, wow.
Because this has been such a crazy ass year. But I feel like coming every 2 weeks and so was really, it kept me going.
Big time.
Like, it was nice to have something positive, especially at the peak of this whole pandemic, or should I say panoramic.
It's nice that you say that, because like, I feel the same way. Like, obviously, I approached you to like join me.
Yeah,
it's been a real pleasure. Like doing it with you. So thank you, really.
Thank you for having me. Because guys, when Eugene was like, "I'm on the pod," I was like, "Have you seen the things that I tweet? I don't think you want me here. I really don't think you want me here." But
that's the whole point.
I was so nervous. Like, honestly, I was just like, I don't know if I can do it. Yeah.
You're like a natural though. Like,
I just, do you know what? I was more nervous of the tennis stuff.
Okay.
Because felt like I put a lot of pressure on myself, and I'm a perfectionist. So I kind of felt like, I don't feel like I know my shit enough for me to be here talking about tennis.
You definitely know your shit.
Now I feel a little bit more confident. I'll definitely say the podcast definitely gave me more confidence and stuff.
Yeah.
But before that, I just felt like, I think you need someone more qualified. Looks like I finessed my way, guys.
I made the right choice, so I'm very confident in that. So yeah, again, thank you. But like you said, man, it's been a crazy year considering coronavirus and like whatever you want to call it, COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But that we've kept on going, and like it's like you said, it's something for me as well that I found to be like almost like therapeutic,
exactly.
Like to kind of have the routine of like every 2 weeks we're recording and like.
Yeah.
I love a routine, so for me it's like it's been definitely one of the highlights for me too.
And thank you to our listeners as well.
Oh, big time. We're gonna like basically thank everyone like at the end.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Yeah, I think we should get into it. So basically it's just gonna be a rundown of the year, and like our moments of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Basically this 2020 season, as we all know, it's been a crazy one. And it's funny because our first ever episode, we kind of had like a rundown of the year so far. Do you remember? Because it was like literally before
the lockdown,
just before exactly the whole corona thing kicked in.
Yeah.
And like we were like, oh, like basically we introduced ourselves obviously, but then we were like, oh yeah, what have been like the highlights of the
highlights.
Season so
oh
far.
Yeah, true.
So like it kind of does feel like we're kind of rehashing like old content, but it's for the
I mean, a lot has happened in tennis this
is what I'm saying,
this whole thing.
Yeah.
Anyways.
And like fair play to like the players, obviously, like mainly, really and truly, for like persevering and kicking on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for me anyway, and like, I guess for you too, like one of the standout moments was Serena Williams winning in Auckland. Like, because obviously that was her first tournament win, like as a mom. And like I said, we touched on it in our first ever episode, but like to kind of see that, it was huge. And obviously, we all know, like, Serena went on to have a decent season, like, considering.
I feel like since she's been back, she's been amazing. I don't care what you
facts
people saying. I think for a mom, she's been absolutely amazing. But, yeah, when she won that, I was so happy. You could see that she was so happy. It was definitely a goal of hers.
Yeah.
And
she got to the doubles final as well with
Wozniacki. Wozniacki, yeah.
And then they lost out to Asia Muhammad and Taylor Townsend, which we spoke about.
And listen, when black women win, we all win, so it's okay.
Nobody lost, exactly.
You know, she lost to people that she's basically going to take over. Do you get what I mean? Like,
and that she's inspired. Like, yeah.
Exactly.
Facts. And another like moment or highlight was Heather Watson winning in Acapulco.
That was so exciting.
Considering the season like she like had, I'd say like last year, like she kind of towards the end of last year,
she was stepping
up.
Yeah,
like she really was putting together some like nice
results. I think if COVID was not happening, I think she would have had like a really great year. I think she was really looking forward to it as well. That's why I remember one of the first episodes I pulled out some stuff from her interview with BBC, and she was even saying how like you know, she doesn't care, she doesn't win a slam for now. Even if she makes it up to like a third or fourth round, yeah. she's really, really happy. So I think she was finally in a place where she was really happy to, you know.
She's the most successful female British tennis player
yeah.
in terms of like tournament wins.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's pretty significant. Like, mm-hmm. and I don't think she gets enough credit, which I, again...
We've always said that.
Exactly. So
we know why, but...
So yeah, shouts out to Emma Watson. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and also shout out to her with those TikTok videos she was doing.
During lockdown, so, no, definitely.
Well.
Definitely.
So yeah.
And then obviously Gael Monfils winning back to back. So Montpellier and then Rotterdam. Yeah. And obviously we spent a long time talking about Rotterdam because obviously mm-hmm. that was the final he played against Felix Serge Eliassime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like just the optics of like seeing like two black guys like in an ATP tennis final, like it was huge. So for me, that was arguably, for me, and we're gonna touch on like our personal like favorites or personal moments of the year, but that's definitely up there for me, like that final. Even though Felix didn't play like his best tennis, I think just seeing both of them in the final was huge. And obviously I think Monfils, before that point, he was like one of the most informed players like in men's tennis.
Yeah, that's why when people were chatting shit now after the lockdown and stuff, I was like, oh, you guys are forgetting, you know, that he was actually on job at the beginning of the year. So I really don't understand.
It was literally him, Novak Djokovic, and Andrei Rublev. They had the most wins before lockdown. So that's good company. Obviously, Rublev and Djokovic, they're currently at the O2 playing in the ATP finals. Exactly. So,
which I was planning to go all in for this year, because this was meant to be the last ATP finals in London.
Yeah, it is, exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah. So yeah, shouts out to Monfils. And then I've got here, well, I won't repeat it, but then I said, well, that's when COVID kicked in. And then put a whole like just spanner in the works. I think, how long was the pause? Like 5 or 6 months?
It was from Indian Wells.
So that was like March, April, May, June.
To like, July. What was the first?
I want to say July or early August.
Early August. I mean, there were some little exhibitions and stuff.
Yeah,
but
a lot of exhibitions.
When we're
yeah.
talking about actual proper tennis, it was basically
tennis.
August.
Yeah.
Beginning of August.
Yeah. And that was, well, I say prior to that, that's when the whole like, I say that's when, well, Black Lives Matter, like that movement kind of kicked off because of the murder of George Floyd and that, like, yeah, that saw massive like protests like around the world basically. And yeah, like a lot of black tennis players were getting involved in terms of like, you know, using their platform to speak up. And like we spoke about this at length, like at the time or during everything, like when everything was kind of happening. But yeah, like Coco Gauff, she was one of the main players like to speak up. Naomi Osaka obviously as well. Francis Tiafoe with the powerful video that he put together.
Taylor
Townsend, yeah, like everybody kind of like basically most.
Even though he's not black, I feel like he was one of the other person who wasn't black who spoke up, but. Patrick actually.
Oh, Mertoglu, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he
definitely.
Spoke a lot about it. And he always has, though.
Like, and like even during his like exhibitions, those exhibitions that he was holding, like I'm pretty sure there was like a substantial amount of money like donated to the Black Lives Matter
exactly,
movement.
Yeah.
So yeah, shouts out to Patrick, definitely. So yeah, and then tennis kind of came back for the women anyway. Where we were concerned, it was Lexington, and that was where we had Venus and Serena. Sloane Stephens, Coco Gauff, like
on that first day,
it was
crazy.
It was huge, like, so, and that for me, that was one of my favorite tournaments of the year, like because not only did it look weird, it was literally a tennis. It's like a local tennis club, like so it wasn't like a proper like.
And it was nice because we went from no tennis. I was literally watching tennis from 4 p.m. to like 1 a.m. It was and the thing is, my body was just like. Not used to this anymore.
To get
what I mean? So it was so weird, but it was like, yeah, like 4 p.m. to 1 a.m. Straight. I was just watching back to back tennis, back to back tennis. There were some matches we were watching at the same time because they were kind of the same
exactly,
time as well. But yeah, that was that first day. I remember it was like, I watched 4 female black players playing back to back, and I was like, I love this.
Yeah. So, and obviously for us personally, that was like probably the moment of our, like, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for here, but like since we performed, so Serena Williams ended up resharing one of our posts to her Instagram, like because it was after her match against her big sister.
That was amazing. That was the best birthday gift ever. My birthday. That was honestly the highlight. Like that was just amazing. So that felt amazing. Serena. Like she barely ever shares posts unless it's from her brand and here and then. But the fact that she went out of her way,
it still blows my mind.
That, honestly, yeah, every now and then I just be walking my mind. I'm like, shit, Serena actually shared our post. You know, like that's mad.
It still blows my mind.
Like honestly, like it's such a big deal. Like,
and I think as well, like. Now we've been doing this for, I say the podcast has been going just, it's not even a year, but exactly. Like it's been a substantial amount of time.
I feel like a lot of the black players, they know about
this
us.
This is the thing, like, and that's what I'm getting to. Like, I think now we're at a point where like, yeah, more players are getting familiar with Blackspin Global because obviously we tagged them in like the posts on Instagram.
Mm-hmm,
A lot of them are liking the posts as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's not just Serena. Like, so like, we have a lot of players.
It's like, yeah, shouts out to like all the black players, like
honestly,
because obviously
it means
a lot. This is why we're doing it. We're doing it to like, yeah, shine a light on your achievements.
100%.
And the fact that you're kind of acknowledging it, like it just keeps us going. It's a big deal. So yeah, it's huge. It's massive. So yeah, that was Lexington. Obviously, I think Naomi Brody ended up winning that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. American.
Which was fair play because she then went on to have like a good like hard court swing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, shouts out to her, and then. The next like kind of big event to kind of happen after that was the Cincy Open, which was taking place in the New York bubble. So it was obviously Cincinnati should be happening in Cincinnati, but because of obviously the COVID restrictions and stuff, it took place at Flushing Meadows, the grounds of the US Open.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when we had Naomi Osaka like stop tennis for the day, which was
amazing.
Just a huge moment.
The funniest thing about that is that since the tennis kind of made it seem like it was them who were stopping it. And listen.
We all knew. Yeah.
Listen.
Those who
y'all didn't stop shit. Okay. Osaka said she ain't playing. And then you said, we care about Blake. I was like, no, you effing don't.
So, like, just to go back on that actually quickly, like, when that all kind of like was kind of breaking or happening, I'm not going to lie, Lucy, I was getting worried thinking, shit, like this could actually, we might not see, like the US Open might not happen. Or for some reason, I did think there was a possibility that black players wouldn't play like the US Open, like in protest. But then
just like the NBA.
Yeah, exactly. Because I thought, is it going to be like a huge kind of like, but then I thought, hang on a minute, Eugene, this is tennis. This isn't a team sport.
This is exactly what I was going to tell you. Yeah. It's just like, look how people reacted by Naomi doing it by herself.
Yeah.
Like, I think, and the thing is as well, is that, you know, a lot of them will be more at risk. You know, like tennis is just a whole different sport. We're talking about a sport that is, again, I've said it so many times on the podcast, is not only a race issue, it's a class issue. So for them, it's like, what the hell are you doing? Like, no. And for some players, a lot of the black players are not really top players like Serena or Naomi that can easily get up and say, you know what, I'm going to stop this. Do you get what I mean?
And that have that kind of like clout.
Like a lot of the big players can get away with a lot of the things, which again, I've said so many times, and it's unfair. And I'm pretty sure some of the small players would be like, damn, like, I wanted to do this, but I know I can't. Do you get what I mean? Naomi still did. She took a huge risk because, again, you know, she has a lot of sponsorships and a lot of her sponsorships are Japanese. Mm-hmm. Do you get what I mean? And you never know. They might not understand this thing, although this actually they understood because a lot of them were talking about what was happening thanks to her in her country because of that. So I'm pretty sure some of them may have feel like they could have done something, but they know, you know, they might not, and someone had to lead, and Naomi did.
Yeah.
So,
well said. I think again, everything you said there is like spot on. So, again, we've said this before too. Like in terms of tennis being an individual sport, like I don't think people kind of like recognize that sometimes when it comes to the amount of like not commitment, but just I guess you can say it's commitment, but what it takes to kind of have. What am I trying to say here?
The courage.
Yeah, like it is courage, actually. It is courage because, yeah, like they are kind of their own brand. So they need to really be smart in terms of like their image, not just like in tennis, but like away from tennis as well, if that makes sense. So I think it's just it's a fine line, like they kind of have to like tread. But yeah, like you said, all the players, they do it so well, like Coco Gauff being 16 now, like the stuff she was doing, it was just, it felt quite uncomfortable at some point as well, because I was like, a kid should not really be doing what she's doing in terms of like being on this pedestal speaking about these issues.
I remember everyone was like quoting it, like, oh, this is so good and special. I'm like, you should actually be fucking ashamed of yourself.
This is what I'm saying.
She is doing this when you're meant to be helping out. I got even more upset when it was white people doing it. And it's like, you actually have, like, if you speak up against racism and stuff, it will be more meaningful than us, because white people don't hear us, especially when we're crying. We can be in tears, we can be bleeding and crying for help to them, or seen, and they will still ignore us because to them it's not their problem.
Exactly. So yeah, that was Cincy, and then the US Open then, like, what a tournament. Yeah, that was my highlight of the year, like, in terms of,
That was definitely,
we'll talk about our tournaments of the year and stuff, but for me, the US Open, just staying up for the matches, and like, I thought they did a brilliant job with the bubble.
No, like, 100%.
It was amazing, like, the way 100%. That was all kind of like, just organised and like controlled. And then,
as much as I make fun of US Open being ghetto, honestly,
not as ghetto as the French, but
I mean, both of them are, to be very honest. Like, both French and US Open are. If I had to pick out one of them, two would definitely be US Open, though. But
I say more.
Like if someone say, Lucy, you want to go US Open or French Open, I'll definitely pick US Open.
Oh, yeah, big time.
But they did really well. They tried their best, even though there was, you know, some, if that, like, people got tested positive. Yeah. It wasn't as much, but is what it is. Like, it's a bloody, you know,
because to be fair to them, they were the first like tournament to really kind of, it was like an experiment almost, so
exactly,
other tournaments they were definitely watching.
Like, I'm pretty sure Australian Open's gonna take
tips
out of there as well. You know, and the thing is that they used the advantage of like their space. You know, US Open is like huge.
Yeah,
like,
massive site.
It's a massive site compared to the French Open, which is why, that's why when people were upset with how the French Open dealt with stuff, it was like, you know, you guys, a lot of you don't understand. Paris is an extremely tiny city. In Paris, there are no houses at all. Like, there are none. That's how small the place is. There are literally only apartments. So it's not the same thing. So they took advantage of the fact that they have space, and they did it well. Yeah. And I really hope Australian Open does the same, because to me, they're very, you know, the way Australia's been doing really well, the pandemic, I know for a fact it's going to be, you know.
I've read a few things about Australia, and I think, they are looking to basically follow a lot of like what the US Open did.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there'll be fans there, because like you said, like,
they're going to be fans.
I'm not sure if it'll be like full capacity, but I think it'll be like a French Open thing.
Yeah, because they've closed their borders completely. Exactly, I think literally only the players will be able to go. Like, their borders have been closed from, they've been living life. Them in New Zealand are at their living life right now.
Players will have to like quarantine as well. Like,
I think a lot of the players are going to be there from early. Yeah, so I don't think any of them will go to any of like the Dubai tournaments and stuff.
So again, I've seen somewhere that apparently I guess you could say the Australian Tennis Federation, they're looking to like basically put on events. So
inside,
Cincy, like, the Australian Open. Exactly. So like, it would be a thing players will be able to kind of like have a base there for a while to like play some tournaments to kind of get into the routine of playing matches.
I think if they do that, that would be great. I think the Dubai tournament's right.
Yeah, exactly. So there'll be like an Australian like kind of swing. Like, nice. In terms of like how there was like an Asia swing, and yeah, it's just so players can like play matches, which is, it's smart.
An advantage for the players, because they can get used to the court.
Exactly,
and
yeah,
so,
and the environment, big time. So yeah, that's next year. And yeah, US Open again. Just to touch on it, well, finish up on that. You will know Osaka won, but it was the manner in which she won. So, obviously wearing those 7 face masks, she said at the start, like, I've got 7 face masks and I intend to wear all 7. Like, pretty boss.
It was a great win.
And she did exactly that.
And she played really well. That's the thing. She played well and she did what she had to do. Yeah. Like, it was amazing.
And like she hasn't played since. Like, so that was literally her last tournament of the year. Not a bad way to sign off.
I want my slam. Bye. I don't blame her at all. If I want my slam off during the pandemic, do you think I'm gonna go to a private island with my friends and have fun? That's exactly what she did for her birthday.
Yeah,
she was in Turks and Caicos with her friends. She enjoyed. She's at Haiti.
Turks and Caicos. Wow. Yeah. I saw Haiti.
She went to Haiti first, but for her birthday, she went to Turks and Caicos. Listen, hey, she is the highest paid female athlete.
True story.
She even go to Bora Bora and rent the whole shit out.
Oh, no. So, yeah, shouts out to Osaka. And then on the men's side, like, it was a significant tournament for, like, Felix Auger-Aliassime as well, because he reached the fourth round, and that's the first time he's gone that deep in a Grand Slam.
And he beat Andy Murray, someone he watched at the same tournament a couple of years ago when he was younger. And we're talking about a GOAT right here.
Yeah, I think that was the second round. Murray had just played Nishioka in the first round. That went to five sets.
Mm.
But yeah, that match with Felix, like, I remember texting back and forth. Was it Greg Wozetsky? I think Greg Wozetsky said, that's the best match he's ever seen Felix play. Like, because he was playing outstandingly well. But we've spoken about this before as well, like how tennis commentary is so...
I hate it.
Like, it's like sensationalized, if that's the right word. But I completely get it, because you get caught up in the moment.
Nah,
like,
but they just didn't need to relax.
You get caught up. So, yeah, like, shouts out to Felix. And also Francis Tiafoe too, because that was the first time he reached the fourth round. So he also got to... Yeah, he got to the fourth round. I think he lost to Medvedev on Alfaraz. And I remember you saying too, like, that would have been a different match if there was a crowd.
Oh, like, 100%. Yeah. 100%. First of all, the Americans don't like Med. And Tiafoe was like, I think at that time, he was probably the only American
left in the men's.
So, it would have been crazy. Oh, when I was watching that match, I was like, can you imagine if the crowd was... I was the only... And the thing is, when tennis was back, I did not care about the crowd and stuff. I was like, okay, may not be a different... But that was the first time I was like, if there was a crowd, this would have been a sick match. Like, and when I say US Open is ghetto, it's mainly because of the people. So people would have been... Like, honestly, do you know how many times Med has situations with the crowd in... I don't know if it's because it's Russian or I don't know what it is, but honestly, that match, it would have been amazing with a crowd. Like, I can just imagine that. Like, it would have been different. The vibes would have been different.
No, I completely agree. And I think a lot of the players feel the same way too, like, in terms of, like... Because you do have players that kind of play up to the crowd, like
Djokovic, for example, he loves a crowd. I think all players do. It's just, to be honest, I feel like all players do, but they just don't actually show it because they don't want to think.
So it's funny you say that. So today, actually, I posted something on the socials. It was a conversation between Andy Murray and Gael Monfils on Monfils' switch.
Yeah, saw that. Yeah.
So obviously Monfils is talking about how he found it difficult when he came back because there was no crowd. And like, he likes the crowd and like kind of
exactly,
feeds off that. And Murray, I love what Murray said, basically, like, they've known each other since they were like teenagers.
And
like, even back then, like, he knew Monfils loved, like, when they're like four or five people watching, much less a whole crowd. So he was like, oh, I can imagine it must have been quite difficult for you. Like,
100%.
But like you just said, like, I do think tennis players, I think athletes in general, they love,
of course,
playing for people. Like, they love
people watching.
It's a whole
different
vibe.
Like, it's a whole different thing.
They're like natural kind of performers.
Exactly.
So
it goes with it.
For them to go from having like massive crowds watching to then absolutely
nothing,
literally nobody, or just like three or four people in the crowd, like, it's a huge difference.
100%.
So yeah, I do think, like you said, I think that does play into a lot of basically some players kind of feel more comfortable speaking or expressing it than others.
I think that's what it is. Yeah.
But no, I think you make a good point. And kind of coming towards the end, because obviously there wasn't that much. There were two Grand Slams after COVID.
Yeah,
because obviously Wimbledon,
US Open, French
Wimbledon
Open
was cancelled, and then exactly. So we had the US Open and then the French Open, and there's something I want to talk about that just like kind of hasn't really been shared anywhere else. But it's quite depressing to be real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so the. We had Francis Tiafoe. He was competing against Jan Edith Struff in the first round. Mm-hmm. France ended up losing in five sets. Tough match. Like, it was because I watched that, and it was a really, really like close match. France has had the trainer come out because he was like, I think he had like an issue with his back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And as obviously during these times, like when the trainer comes out now, like players have to wear their face masks, like yeah. as like a, I guess it's standard procedure.
Yep.
Which is I guess cool. Okay, fine. But France has had a Black Lives Matter face mask, which yep. he was also wearing at the US Open, because yep. I remember him walking onto court with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it turns out that one of the like tournament, I guess referees, because mm-hmm. an official, a tournament yeah. official,
mm-hmm.
they accompany the trainer when they come out to like see to the player.
Yeah.
So this tournament official told Francis Tiafoe to either remove the mask, but like turn it inside out. Because I don't want to say the direct quotes, but I was told, Francis Tiafoe was told basically they're not doing this at the French Open.
Mm-hmm.
As in, they're not doing the whole Black Lives Matter protest, or like,
not surprised.
Which is like, I just thought to myself, wow, like this is mad. Like,
and it also shows to you again that these tournaments and stuff, when they were doing it was all for show. Even when US Open had a sign and stuff, to me, I wasn't buying it, because I felt like I genuinely feel like they did it because they kind of knew that Naomi was going to bring it over to the US Open, so they don't want it to look all bad and stuff. I personally don't think they would have done it. In terms of French Open, I am not surprised. For those who are not aware, France is a, when it comes to race, when it comes to race, religion, when it comes to all of these things, even simple as women rights, it is honestly a backward place. Yeah. So I'm not surprised at all. For them, it's just, yeah, honestly, like, it's just crazy. Like, I honestly wish people knew, especially American people, and yeah. I'm saying that because I feel like the issue is that a lot of people don't know the black issues that other countries go for, because unfortunately our media in European countries are not as big as the American media,
yeah.
and whatever happens in America affects us, and I feel like it's not really the other way around that much. So that's why I feel like a lot of Americans, for example, are not aware of the things that we go through. And when I mean we, I'm talking about Europeans.
Yeah, black Europeans. Yeah,
black Europeans. Yeah, yeah. The shit we go through here is just unbelievable, but you guys are never aware. And it has a lot to do with that as well. So I'm not surprised by this action at all. And honestly, French Open, y'all motherfuckers.
Because when I heard that this was the case, I was like, wow, like this is mad. And like you said, I don't think people are aware of like the black experience in Europe, like
mm-hmm.
it's I'm not saying, and listen, racism exists, like, and it's not going anywhere, unfortunately, like that's just part and parcel, but like, yeah, I do think sometimes people are a bit ignorant when it comes to
yep.
the things we experience.
Honestly,
on a day-to-day basis,
France is a place I love a lot, yeah. like especially Paris. I love the food. Mm. I love it, like I literally see myself living there.
And this is I've been to Paris once in my life, and like I love the vibe.
That's what I'm saying.
It felt very familiar. Like,
exactly, yeah.
Because where I was,
yeah.
it was, there were a lot of black people, and like, I felt very comfortable.
Yeah,
like,
but the racism there is so crazy. Like, if you're looking for an apartment and you're black, it's 100 times longer and harder for you if you're going to France. So honestly, again, I'm not surprised by this. And French Open, shame on you.
That is depressing, but no, indeed. And shouts out to TFO as well,
100%.
Because again, that's a big thing to be doing. Like, not only are you one of very few black players on the tour, but like to feel not even comfortable, because I don't think comfortable is the right word, but like to do such a thing, like it's quite powerful.
It just shows you again that black lives don't actually matter. And it goes back to my point with, I'm pretty sure if he was a bigger player, he would have been able to do something about it. Do you get what I mean?
Point.
Probably a side of him wanted
that
to,
is a,
you
that's
know,
such a great, so that
wanted to scream, but it's like,
imagine,
I can't.
Imagine if that was Naomi Osaka or Serena Williams. They wouldn't say a word. They wouldn't say a word. I don't think they'll say anything to Serena. Maybe Osaka.
I think they'll try, but I
don't think they'll say anything to Serena.
I think they would have, but it would have gotten a reaction. Maybe not from Naomi. with Serena, I think they would. They already have funny business with Serena.
I know with her.
Especially
like,
after that whole catsuit situation. Yeah. So maybe they would have avoided because they don't want that again because it backfired when it came out of the catsuit thing. Everyone was attacking French. Listen, French Open, we are not in 99. We're in 2000 and something. And us millennials and all, you know, younger generation, you're doing something twisted. We are coming for you. So don't try it.
We ain't having that no more. But you know, that was like one of the pressing events at the French Open. But for me, or for us even, like, I loved seeing the juniors. So there were a lot of, like, black European juniors coming through, like, on the women or the girls' side and the boys' side. And again, we broke it down, like, obviously after the tournament. So I think that bodes well for the future. And, like, obviously shouts out to all the juniors. And a few of them, too, are following, like, on Instagram.
Oh, nice.
Because it's...
Welcome, guys.
We tagged a few of them and, like... A few of them are following back. Well, I say following back. We're not following, but we see you and we appreciate you. So thank you. And like Lucy said, welcome. And to kind of like round up the first part of the show, Felix Auger-Aliassime winning his first ATP title in doubles, not singles, which is huge. Like, because it was a Masters event in Paris.
Yeah.
Hubert Hurkacz was his partner. And I think that was only their second tournament playing together because they played, I think, in Rotterdam near the start of the year. But to win, they beat, like, I want to say 3 or 4 seeded players.
Yeah.
Like, en route to the final.
Yeah, they
like,
beat top players. Top doubles.
Overall, exactly.
Players. Yeah, exactly.
So, like, for them to kind of be doing that, and they're both, like, pretty good singles players. Like,
I think this would definitely give the boost to Felix.
No,
as well.
Massively.
Not that he lost it, but I think, you know, it's good. I'm happy that he at least won something because he really did deserve after a good year, to be honest. Like, so he's been working.
He had, I think this year alone, he reached three finals. Obviously lost all three of them, as in singles finals.
But with against very big players.
Exactly. So
other players.
This is what I'm saying. Plus with Felix too, this year he was announced... Well, yeah, he's going to be on the ATP Players Board.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what were you saying?
No, go on.
No, what are you saying?
I mean, it was funny because remember he quickly joined the Djokovic one, aka the MAGA one. But somehow he found the light.
I think it's kind of harsh, like just putting that on Djokovic because it's not just Djokovic.
And he's being dragged back.
It wasn't just Djokovic. That was Vasek Pospisil. It's a combined effort, as in the independent one.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, who's going to be the true leader of that thing?
But I'm saying, as in with Felix, obviously Pospisil's Canadian, so like that would have been like
No, I wasn't saying Djokovic like snatched him. It was more. I was just saying like I just call it Djokovic's team.
Okay,
to
you know,
me, it's just like his own. That's his own thing. Do you get what I mean?
Fair enough.
But I'm glad that he saw the light and he's been just dragged out because that whole council thing was just looking messy.
What do you think though in terms of like with Felix joining the Players Council? Like, yeah, how, what kind of change or, yeah, like. What kind of benefit will that have on the game for you personally? Like, I'm just interested. Because I think Murray's also joined it too. I think there's like 12...
Wait, the Djokovic one?
No, it's the ATP Player Council. Okay. So there's 12 players on it. I know Federer and Nadal, they're both on it. Who else is on it? I've just thought off my head. Kevin Anderson, the South African.
Okay.
The Australian guy... What's his name? John Millman. I think he's on it too.
Okay.
Like some other doubles, like well respected doubles players.
Right.
But I think Felix is the only black player on it, and also the youngest.
Okay.
So just for me personally, I think again, like obviously, on all these types of like boards that we speak about, there needs to be like a diversity of like thought, like and
100%
different, you know. Mentality and like just ideas coming.
I'm happy that he's in it, but the thing is, I've said this in a pod for so many times. At the end of the day, I feel like they're always going to favor the big three. You can have 10 councils, you can have all type of councils, diverse, not diverse, and stuff. I feel like they will always favor those big three. Do you get what I mean? And I feel like there's been proof over the years that that's what they do.
So you,
which is fine, because at the end of the day, money, they need to make money.
So you don't think he'll have any like real influence, as in Felix?
No, not because he doesn't bring in any, mainly because at the top, they're not going to be thinking about him. Because
I do think that players, a lot of the players do respect him in terms of like...
That's what I'm saying, yeah. In terms of the between the players, I feel like if he comes in and say, this is that or that, I don't think they're not going to listen to him.
Yeah.
But when it's time to make the decision, they're not going to think about what he wants. That's why we need more black people in the Bulls. That's why we need more people who don't care, who don't just think about the big threes.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? And I find it stupid that they still are, because these motherfuckers are getting old. We need to stop thinking of the new generation. And it's needed. Do you get what I mean?
Oh,
we need to accept the fact that, yes, they're legends. Yes, they, when they say they're playing, it brings in, you know, views, it brings in money. But you can't just focus on them right now. They are literally like done at here. Like, it's time to focus on the next thing. So, and I don't like how we've only been talking about the ATP Men Council. What about the women?
Should be combined, definitely. Yeah.
Hello?
No,
what about them as well?
Because obviously there was talk, obviously when we were in lockdown, there was like the
that
merger
little
talk,
that merged
like,
talk. And then what happened after that? Now we're talking about a whole new... And what did I say on the pod when that happened? They were just saying that our boredom. People were bored at home because of COVID.
That was your boy Federer though, posting that. Oh,
I know. Like,
good idea.
Frederick kind of disappointed me twice this week, but it's okay. Okay. But on a real, when people were just talking, I was just looking at everyone, I was like... So BJK, that was moving up and down for years, has been screaming and saying that we're doing all the work. This guy comes and say, yeah, I think it'd be good at you. So what happens to the merge now, guys? Everyone who was talking about this merge, where are you? It's quiet.
It's wild.
Crickets.
Yeah, it's wild.
Quiet. Zip.
It's wild.
Nothing.
On that too, like, we're not going to talk, well, yeah, we're not going to really discuss the ATP finals, but I think the WTA and ATP, they missed out on a massive opportunity.
100%.
With the ATP finals, because... That should have been a combined event. Like,
I feel like they could have brought that to London.
This is what I'm saying. Like, in this year of like uncertainty and like, yeah, things being up in the air, that could have been quickly kind of put together. Like, and it wouldn't have taken that much effort, I think, anyway. So I think it's just quite disappointing to see that, because obviously now after Linz, there's nothing for the women. Like, they're done. So,
but I think, do you think it's because of, because I'm double checking the top 10. At first, I thought maybe they didn't want to do it because a lot of the players might not be able to think, but a lot of them are European players.
Exactly.
The only
European
player
based.
I think that probably would have not been able to do it is Barty.
Yeah, because
she hasn't done anything.
She's done for the year.
She's done for the year, early. Which I understand. She's in Australia. She's stuck there. Everything's going
well. I'd like to think all of the players.
Andreescu.
Yeah.
And I think... I'm hesitating to include Serena or not, because she hasn't done any WTA finals in all. She doesn't normally do them as often, does she? Her and Asia are just a bit...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she played the last one she was eligible to play. I'm pretty sure she did. And I'm pretty certain, because is she... Would she have qualified though? Because she's number
10.
Because it'd be the top
is
eight.
Not eight.
It's
is it
top
eight?
Eight.
Oh, okay, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. No, actually she wouldn't. So it would have been... I think the only person that would have been missing is honestly Barty.
Yeah.
Maybe Osaka.
I think Osaka would have played.
She would have, yeah, because it's a hard court as well.
And
she
also,
likes hard
court.
No, it would literally only been Barty and Andreescu who would have missed out.
They've missed there.
Which they can then replace
with Serena could have dropped.
And then that would have been Burton's as well.
Can
and
you
Burton's
imagine?
Would have thing. See,
and that would have been a huge draw. Like,
they did miss out. I definitely, you said that quite a few times. You felt like
really
from the beginning that
really
they should have done it. Yeah.
Really, really disappointing. So yeah, next, I kind of want to, this is like a personal thing now for us in terms of like our personal like players of the year. And you already know who I have.
Yeah.
So we're doing both men and women. So for me, actually no, ladies first.
No, you go, do you know what? The thing is, we kind of have to say.
No, and it's understandable. Like, completely.
So mine definitely women, was definitely Osaka, mainly because obviously with like everything that she did was bringing awareness to the Black Lives Matter, and the way she was just playing, I've always said that, you know, the way she plays is amazing. Her consistency, she's won slams every year since 2017. If you think about it, US Open 2017, Australian Open 18, again US Open this year. So we love consistency right here. I think another great thing as well is that I've seen her grow. She's coming up, she's more confident, she's more out of her shell, so it's really great to see. And I feel like she's making tennis cool.
Yeah, big, you know, that's
like I've seen a lot of black, now I see a lot of my, when I see Naomi Osaka's post on IG, I see a lot of my friends liking her post that don't watch tennis.
Wow,
so it's like,
that's hard.
It's really like cool. Do you get what I mean? It's like, you know, I was a bit scared when, you know, realizing that the Williams, you know, might retire and stuff. And it's like, oh, really, who else? Do you get what I mean? I feel like Osaka is going to be like the next person to bring it to us. Do you get what I mean?
On that, like the influence. So Halloween is massive in America. Like they go all in.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yes.
I don't know if you saw, you probably did. A lot of like kids were dressing up as Osaka.
Osaka, yeah. No, like, I think I shared one. Oh, yeah. Really? There was one, it was like an entire family. I think they were all playing, they were all like dressed up as the US Open. The trophy. And
I think I saw
girl,
that.
I shared it to my friend. I was like, this is going to be me. Like, that's literally what I'm going to be doing. But definitely her. And in terms of men's, I will say, I'll actually say Felix.
Yeah.
Mainly because his game was just being, has just been on point.
Consistent as well.
It's been like, very consistent.
Cause
yeah.
That's something, because I struggled with the men. Like, I wanted to say Felix, but I didn't. But with Felix, not to cut you, but the fact that he's reached 3 finals, like,
it's amazing.
In a year, like,
in at that age,
this is what I'm saying to you.
He just seems so focused.
This is it, and like, I just think again, he's someone that doesn't really get deterred by the fact that like he's losing in the final. To him, the fact that he's getting there, like, that just shows he's doing things like right. He's doing the right things. Mm. Also, we didn't even touch on like his coach. So, one of his coaches anyway, he's parted ways with Guillaume Marx.
Yeah.
I think that's the one. But he's going to continue to work with Frederick Fontang, who, because it's like a team of coaches that he had. Yeah. So like two coaches. Mm. And I think that's smart, because for me, you don't need so many voices like kind of giving you, putting you in this direction in the other.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, sorry, that's, yeah, Felix is your guy. So.
Yeah. No, he's been, and seems like he just minds his business and does his thing. You know, I was really proud of him when he beat Andy. As much as I remember that match, I was just like, I want both of them to win, because Andy has made it, you know, such a long way, everything that he's been doing. And I was very proud of him. Very, very happy. What about you?
Yeah, so for me, I'm for the women anyway, Osaka. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's a no-brainer. And I think if she doesn't win the end of year, like WTA player of the year, something's wrong. And I will be right. I'm joking. I probably will write something about that, actually, if she doesn't win. She like, you, like everything you just said, like it's completely it. Like, so from the US Open run, before that, the Cincy stuff, and even before that, like the stuff she was doing in lockdown, like we said, with Coco Gauff, and like just the using her platform and not being afraid to speak.
Yep.
And like kind of going back and forth sometimes with people on Twitter, like, which I not that I'm against it, but I wouldn't advise it, because to me, you're wasting.
And she wasn't crazy, like, she was.
But this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know what?
Most
fair,
of them
fair
were
play.
Even like in a funny way. As
this
well.
Is what I'm saying to you. So fair play to her. So Osaka for the women. For the men, I'm going with Francis, because I think Tiafoe, he's been just his work ethic has been incredible this year. Like, so, and one thing I love about Francis as well, the fact that he's kind of gone back down to play challenges, as well as playing like ATP events. So he won, was it 40? I think he won the 40 Challenger in Italy. And that was after the French Open. And yeah, like, he's basically, his kind of out, or I say out, his target was to basically get his ranking back up to like top, inside the top 50. I think currently right now he's like 50, just outside that.
Okay.
But at the start,
where was he?
This is the thing. So at the start of the year, I think he was like in the like 80s.
Oh wow.
So okay. he's literally worked his way back up.
Mm.
And I for me, obviously he had COVID too. Like he actually had the virus.
Oh yeah, that's true. I keep forgetting. So that. He actually was, yeah.
So to kind of combat that, and then also, like I said, he put together that run at the US Open, which is the first time he got to the fourth round. For me, like, just the work ethic and like the, just the determination, I think that just deserves like a lot of like praise. So we're giving it to him like here. Shouts out to Francis Tiafoe.
Yes,
and also shouts out to Zach. We're gonna get on to like our shout outs at the end. But obviously Zach Evenden being his coach, or one of his coaches now anyway, who gave us his time earlier in the year.
Yeah.
I think that kind of wraps up our play of the years or play of the season segment. Tournament of the season, Lucy, for you.
Oh, definitely US Open.
Yeah, which you kind of said, I guess.
Yeah, before. US Open. But yeah. Well, what was your favourite match during the US Open? I've got mine.
You know what? I'm gonna go Felix Murray.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna go because he served like Felix served. I want to say 22 or 23 aces.
Wow.
Like, what the...
Again, these players, when they know they're playing a big player, fam, they don't want to crack.
He was playing lights out. So, for me, that second round match.
Okay.
But it was tough because Osaka played some crazy matches. Listen. Serena played some mad matches. For you, who...
It was 100% Osaka versus Azarenka.
So the final?
No. Which one was the semi-final? Osaka against who? There was a crazy semi-final.
Brady.
Let me double check. No, I need to remember. Because Azarenka was the final. But the semi-final, I remember that match was just insane. Osaka semi-final.
Pretty sure it was. Was it Brady?
Was it?
And I've just noticed as well, I said Naomi.
Yeah. It was Brady.
And it's Jennifer Brady.
Yes.
Is it Jennifer Brady? Not
Jennifer Brady.
Because I said Naomi Brady. I'm so sorry.
So yeah, my favourite match that US Open was Osaka versus Jennifer
big,
Brady.
Big, I think babe, it's big babe tennis.
I kind of, I didn't expect it.
Yeah.
But it was like, they were both like hungry. Like it was just insane. And I feel like that semi-final lineup was the best women's lineup in a very long time.
Yeah.
We had Azarenka and Serena, and then we had Naomi and Jennifer Brady. Yeah. That when I saw that, I was like, oh, yes,
yeah. No,
this
it's
is
true.
What I'm looking forward for. Like, yeah, those were definitely my favorite matches.
Even that Serena Azarenka match was pretty.
It was really good.
Pretty high standard.
Yeah,
and also Sloane Serena. I think that was the fourth round. Because don't forget, Sloane came out playing lights out.
Yeah.
Took the first set, like, in...
First of all, yeah. No, oh my gosh. I should have given props to Stevens US Open. Hey.
Talk that talk.
Hey.
No, shout out to Stevens.
She was very...
Exactly.
I think she even knew that people, like, you know, I remember I even called out a journalist because he was chatting shit. About Stevens.
Oh, okay, yeah. I think when people, his name.
Yeah, we'll mention his name, but fuck you.
New York Times. Sorry.
Oh gosh. Sorry. Don't cut that. So I remember when we're like, you know, like the draws were out and we're putting out the predictions and blah blah blah. And then I think he must have tweeted something like Serena versus Sloane and Sloane and Stevens. He put like a bracket if she makes it or something like that. And then as soon, you know what? I saved that tweet. I was like, you know what? We'll just wait on. And as soon as she won, as in before they even said, and that's a wrap, Stevens, I literally tweeted him and said, what did you say? And he was out here waffling. I was like, shut up, man.
Oh, my God.
Shut up. But shout out to Stevens. She played really, really, really well that US Open. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, to her next year. I'm wondering if she's going to go to Australia.
Yeah, I would say so. I'd say she will. I think a lot.
I think most players are going to be like, "All right, let's go." Because I think after US Open and French Open happening, I think people, you know, like, I feel like Wimbledon already has a plan of what's going to happen, how they're going to do it next year. There might not be any players, but I think it's going to happen. Can you imagine Wimbledon?
Don't.
Not play. Sorry, there might not be any fans, but can you imagine Wimbledon so quiet? Bloody hell!
Before we move on, actually, as well, I want to shout out Coco Gauff because she's back in the top 50. Like,
nice.
I want to say it's a career high. I'm not quite sure if it is, but yeah. So for her, she's 16 now. Yeah, she didn't reach the heights of like last year
but she did played well.
Exactly. And like.
And she played against a lot more top players this year compared to last year.
Yeah. And I think now players kind of know her game.
Yeah.
So
it's
going to be much
more
difficult.
It's not like before where people were just like, right.
So. Shouts out to Coco Gauff, man. And obviously, like we said, all the stuff she was doing, like with the Black Lives Matter movement and like just using her platform, she's going to be a real force.
Yeah,
so
100%.
We just need to protect her, though. And we definitely intend to, like on this platform.
Yeah.
So, kind of wrapping up now, Lucy, some shout outs. So I want to shout out Curtis Clark, who's obviously Jay Clark's brother and coach.
Yeah.
Because he was literally our first ever interview on the pod. So yeah, like shouts out to Curtis, and like, yeah, obviously he follows, we follow each other on social, and he's always liking our posts, and yeah, it's kind of nice to kind of develop that kind of relationship. Also Sasha Vickery, who was our first ever player that we interviewed. So yeah, shouts out to Sasha Vickery. She had a decent-ish year, I guess. She beat Taylor Townsend in the first round of the US Open.
I'm so mad we didn't get to watch that match. Yeah. Because US Open didn't fucking film it, and you're saying that Black Lives Matter does it? I was looking forward to that.
On Vickery as well. You know, she actually, in the second round, she played Swiatek or Swiatek.
Okay.
French Open champ.
Okay, yeah.
And she took her to three sets. She actually could have won that match, as in Vickery. So considering obviously what Swiatek went on to do with the French, shouts out.
Yeah.
I also want to shout out Rodney Rapson of the EXO Tennis or EXO Sports.
Yeah. Oh, and also we did an interview with EXO Sports. So if you guys haven't checked that out, please do. It was very nice interview. Really enjoyed it.
Shouts out to Ollie Warren too. Juan Del Bruna, who was also another coach that we interviewed during the year. Also Wandel, like, massive shout out, because he was the guy that kind of connected us with Vickery in terms of like getting that all like set up. So
big
thanks to you, Wandel. Rohan Watley too, the college tennis episode that we did, like,
yeah,
talking about like the college
different.
the black college tennis player experience, which is awesome. So yeah, shouts out to Rohan. Zach Ebenden, like I said, obviously TFO's coach. And yeah, like, last but not least, the brilliant co-hosts we've had, like guest co-hosts. So first we had Tamani Carriol of The Guardian.
Both episodes were
incredible.
My favourites, yeah. Definitely.
Really, just so insightful.
Good vibes. We're like, definitely having more of Tamani.
Definitely. And also Anne-Marie Batson, broadcaster.
Shout out to her.
Yeah, she's done stuff with Wimbledon.
She's been doing a lot of stuff lately.
Yeah, she's doing a lot of like Talk Sport. Yeah, she's really, really getting it in. So yeah, shouts out to Anne-Marie as well. And yeah, like I just think, like you said, like kind of wrapping up, like what a year it's been, considering it's not been the most, what's the word?
Like, active tennis year.
Yeah, like routine when it comes to like tennis tournaments, but somehow we've kind of managed to kind of keep going. Mm-hmm. So again, Lucy, thank you, man, because if I wouldn't really be able to do this on my own, like, not really, I would definitely not be able to do this on my own. So big thank you to you.
It's been great. Honestly, it's been great. Talking about tennis, talking about black people in tennis, talking about black excellence.
No, it's huge. And like, I'm just excited for like the future, because I think a lot, there's a lot to look forward to.
100%.
Like, considering what we've kind of managed to achieve, like,
imagine what we could have done if tennis was actually on.
Guys,
Black's been global. Yeah, it's out there.
I have big plans. I have big plans, and I see big things. Like,
I should have bought a bottle of champagne, some Belle Rosé, you know, some Dom Pérignon.
So yeah, man, like, shouts out to everybody that's been like, yeah, listening.
Yeah, listening, subscribing, sharing. Thank you guys. Thank you so much. Thank you all for listening. Even if it's for 30 seconds, just thank you for rating, for reviewing.
It means a lot.
Thank you to our friends and our family, you know, everyone. Eugene sent me a screenshot of one of our aunts saying that she loves me. Oh. Auntie, I love you too. Thank you for your support and listening
Necker,
to
my
nonsense. but yeah, it's been an incredible journey, and I'm so looking forward to season two, man. I'm looking forward to, I think more players are going to be playing next year.
Yeah.
I really hope some players are out, like, for example, like Barty. She hasn't played anything. Not that I'm a huge fan of Barty, but I just want everyone just, you know, like, listen, coronavirus ain't going nowhere, all right? Just come out. Some of you players have the privilege of getting tested every time, and, you know, I'm not all. I know some of you are not, you know, like, for example, US Open, some players were fortunate enough to get, you know, instead of staying in a bubble, getting their own houses, which Andy Murray, for example, said it was very expensive. I really want to know how much it was, because if Andy says expensive and the way he was going on about how expensive it was, I really want to know how expensive, like, the price of it. But, you know, like, as long as you guys go safe, you know, with your mask and everything, you distance. And, you know, for example, Conta, I remember she explained how she drove from one city to another. Yeah,
It was Lexington. Yeah. She drove from Lexington to New York.
Exactly. Because, you know, in, just to keep it safe and stuff. So, you know, like, just guys, you might have to change some shit. You know, everyone's lives has actually changed. But, like, we need to adapt to a whole new thing. It's not easy. Mentally, it's draining. It's been mentally draining for me, definitely. As much as I'm here busting jokes, guys, today I woke up and I was like, what the F is going on? But, you know, it is what it is. We're all in this. It's not. Yeah. That's the thing about this pandemic. I feel like it's different because it affected every single person, the rich, the poor, everyone. Life,
exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah.
No, I can't really say anything on that. That's literally, yeah, everything you've said there is spot on. So, yeah, just thank you guys, and yeah, look forward to
we'll still be posting on social.
Indeed, definitely, yeah. Definitely. We look forward to continuing next year. But yeah, like you said, we'll still be posting on socials and stuff. It just won't be like the fortnightly pods.
Yeah.
That there were before, but I don't want to say when we'll be back, but definitely before, obviously the tour kind of kicks off again next year. But yeah, just keep your eyes peeled, basically. Like, I don't want to say too much, but yeah, just keep your eyes peeled.
We out here, baby.
But yeah, indeed. We're definitely out here. So just thank you again. And yeah, stay safe.
Stay safe.
And until next time.